All right, welcome to tonight's party roundtable discussion. And we're gonna get started here, even though we don't have a full crew today. We're missing Jason and we're missing Rachel. She should be here shortly. But right now, Brendan and I are going to fill in here and take over. And when Rachel shows up shortly, she can jump on in wherever we are at.
Jumping right away at, yes,
Yeah,
yes.
so anyway. We are here, and it's a pretty day here in the Ozarks, and we hopefully it's pretty where you're at. But we are excited about the new Trump administration. You
Yes,
excited, Brendan?
sir, I am.
He's been doing some great things already. I posted on Facebook the other day. At that time, it was only the second day, but we say now a week, but in a week, he's already become the greatest president since Teddy Roosevelt. So it's and people are surprised that he's keeping his promises.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I mean, this is the first election I've been able to legally vote in as being a citizen
So the
here
other votes
now.
you voted illegally?
No, sir, I did
You
not
said
vote.
this is
Wish I could have, but no.
the first vote you could vote
Well,
illegally.
now that I'm a citizen of this country, yes. But from the beginning, watching all the candidates, it was very exciting getting involved. Being surrounded by people that know a lot about this, I've learned a lot about my new home country, and I tell you, it's a true privilege and an honor to be living in America. It is.
I wonder how many people really appreciate that.
I think there are a lot of people I think would take advantage of that growing up here, not realizing what they have. A good friend of ours,
And not realize what they can lose.
what they can lose,
Yeah.
yes. It's just something I was reading just before we talk on anything Don Trump's been doing. Just a friend of ours, Paul Fromm, made a trip to South Africa not all that long ago, and I was just looking over some of the stuff that he came across, and I was thinking to myself, if I was to mention this 25, maybe 30 years ago to anybody in South Africa, what it is now, you'd be put away in probably in a psych insane asylum,
Without a
and
believe it.
Giving you some heavy duty medications because they would have thought you have lost your mind. And he's speaking about how this one particular lady, her name is Lee Oxley-Dupree, and she's heading of the South African Relief Project, and she takes care of over 16 camps of thousands of white South Africans that are homeless. And it's not just that these are just people who refuse to work or don't want to work. These are people who first were affected by how we all known as the affirmative action, which then in South Africa became retrenchment, and then now they have what they call the BEE program, and that's basically 75% of all workers in a facility need to be black. And so you have skilled workers, educated workers, but just can't work.
Right.
So I think
As
that'd be
South
great.
Africa is different than in this country. There's enough
Right.
white people in this country and in Europe still that they can reclaim control of their country.
Right.
But in South Africa, there's no possibility of that.
No.
Because
No.
what a person, how many white people are compared to non-white
Well, back in
Africans?
1999, I know the stats were there were 17 blacks to one white. That
Yeah.
was in 1999. I don't know what it is now.
So there's no chance that they're voted out of power.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
And
definitely.
well, here's Rachel. She just comes sweeping through the front door.
Good morning.
Morning,
And
everyone, or afternoon.
we're talking about South Africa. And we just got started. And he was talking about some of the conditions that exist in South Africa. Paul Fromm, as he mentioned,
Right.
was there recently and wrote a lengthy article we published in the Crusader. And his article was published in some other publications also. But I was just mentioning, as you come through the door, that in South Africa, those people have no way of regaining their country because the population is so over, not just majority non-white, it's overwhelming non-white. And those people can never, through the voting process, ever regain control of their country. This country, we still have the possibility to regain, as we did perhaps somewhat in the Trump election. But if the non-white population demographics continue to increase, we will be outnumbered here also.
Yeah, foolish enough to surrender the nation to third world savages.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, in South Africa, the churches are contributing Journal of Evangelism here just a few days ago, and they were talking about population. And so they were talking about the family dynamic, how in first world countries, the norm, even though breaking down, the norm is still a nuclear family with the mother and father and children and so forth. And how in South Africa, they have to go at it from a totally different standpoint because there's virtually no male-headed households. They're female or young people because, you know, the AIDS rate is so high there that there's so many young people that just, you know, 13, 14-year-olds that are heading their own families. And so the basis of the article was that as the family continues to disintegrate in the first world countries, they can use the methods that they're using now in South Africa to reach young people in first world countries because the family is becoming obsolete, as shown by what's happening in South Africa. And I was like, that has nothing to do with, you know. And so basically they were trying to redefine the family and that the nuclear family is obsolete and the biblical descriptions of the family and so forth, that really has no bearing on society.
This is a Christian magazine?
This was a Christian peer-reviewed journal.
Uh-huh.
And so basically South Africa is the future of the world. The conditions of South Africa is the future of the world. And so if you want to reach young people, then you have to stop thinking from an authoritarian nuclear family type viewpoint and just look at everyone as, I don't know what their point really was, except that the family is like, the family is going to be no more, you know, in another 40 or 50 years.
Basically abandon our culture.
Abandon our culture.
And embrace the non-white culture. All under the banner of Christianity.
Right, because that's the future of the world.
Right.
And that we shouldn't try to necessarily reinstate the concept of the nuclear family, but just to look at it from the standpoint that the biblical model is outdated.
Right. And, you know, people talk about, you know, as if culture is really not important. Like,
right.
Culture developed, one had culture, the other had culture. Like, that doesn't have any eternal consequence.
Right.
You know, so why are you fighting over a culture when that doesn't have eternal, it doesn't affect your soul? But it does, because the culture is like a bark around the tree. The bark around the tree protects the tree. And when you remove the bark, it's subject to disease and rot, and the tree will die.
Right.
And the bark is our culture. It's our traditions, our values, those that that make us a people, identify us as a people, keep us intact, keep us strong, the inner relationship with other people. All that comes under this idea of culture. And you take that away, so we no longer have this white identity, and we're destroyed. It's just that simple. I would like to, we don't necessarily need to take a break, but Caleb and Tate is going to come in here and sit up for a few minutes. So I'm going to jump and grab them, have them come in here for a few minutes, and you can talk while we'll keep
them. Well, anyway, one thing I saw that was interesting a few days ago was a comment that someone had emailed in regarding our show, White Resistance News, and Pastor Rob had used the analogy of a cup and another cup and so forth, and the fact that, you know, in physics, two things can't occupy the same space at the same time. And I thought it was really funny because this nut job emailed in and said, "You guys are so stupid. You have no brain. You don't know your facts." And he said, "Look, I've got a cup and it's filled with water and it's sitting on the table. So you don't know what you're talking about, because here's a cup and water, and it's sitting on the same space. So how can you say that two things can't occupy the same space at the same time?" I thought, you moron. First off, the water is in the cup. They might be sitting on the table, but the molecules of the water, the H2O, is not combined and sharing the same, however small, it's not sharing the same space as the molecules of the ceramic cup. And I was like, wow, you simpleton. It was just, but, you know, if people, you know, if the new saying is, if you're going to hate, you know, haters got to hate. I think that's a Swift song.
Yeah.
But anyway, I was just mentioning, Pastor Rob, about someone that had emailed in regard to one of your analogies about, two things can't occupy the same space at the same
right.
time. And, you know, here's a cup and here's another cup, but
right.
they can't. You know,
that's the laws of physics.
Right. And so this guy wrote in, you stupid people, morons, blah, 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 few cuss words, saying, look, I've got a cup right here and it's got water in it and it's sitting on the table. And the water and the cup are both on the table. What are you talking about? They can't occupy the same space. And I didn't even bother to respond back.
No,
it's like the H2O molecules are not sharing the same space as the ceramic cup molecules.
Yeah.
However small those molecules are. But anyway,
we don't respond to people like that. What's the point?
I just thought that was kind of amusing.
So we have Caleb and Peyton here today. Jason's not here right now, but they're filling in for their dad. So say hi.
Hi.
And I see Peyton came in with a bow, and Caleb came in with a knife. So have you boys been out doing some wilderness playing, or are you just hanging out with your...
Literally hanging out with their weapons.
Hanging out with your Christmas presents.
So, Caleb, I didn't hear hi from you yet. Real loud.
Hi.
Real loud.
Hi.
Okay. They just come in to listen. It's important that people involve the family. And we always try to involve the family and the kids, you know, to sit and listen a little bit. That's how they start to learn and begin to understand things. And so people need to always involve your family. That's one thing bad about the internet, is because people go on the internet, dad or mom go on the internet, and they do their interaction with other racialists around the country and so forth. But the kids aren't really involved. They're not on the keyboard with them.
Right.
They're
somewhere else. Phone or whatever.
Yeah, they're somewhere else. So, you know, and then it becomes just that's what mom does. That's what dad does, you know, while the kids are out doing their own thing. And that's why conference is so important. Because it helps bring the kids together. And we always tell people, if you're going to pass out literature, you know, have your kids help you roll up the papers. If you're going to mail out 10, 15 papers off to
people. Have them lick the envelopes.
Lick the envelope. Put the stamp on them. Fold the papers up. They can help out. They can be a part of it. And
yeah, and plus, you know, anymore, I mean, young people, you know, even their age, what are you, 10 years old, Caleb?
You're 11 next Sunday.
And then Tayton, 8 years old. Well, anyway, even kids nowadays are very, you know, good at the internet and stuff like that. So, I mean, if there's, you know, some sort of a slogan you like or some sort of, you know,
help make a meme
thing like that, yeah, help them, you know, they can go and copy and paste those things on websites or message boards or Twitter or just what, I mean, they can do. They might be better at it than their parents.
Yeah. And now Caleb is really good at, really likes to draw.
Mm-hmm.
He likes everything. He wants to draw everything around. He wants to draw it. And so he may someday, as we talk about it now, he might want to do illustrations and so forth, you know, and, you know, maybe cartoons or things like that.
Right.
And when I say cartoons, I mean cartoons with a message.
Animation for, to focus on young people.
Correct.
Right.
So he's may show an interest in that. We'll see.
And that's really important. And it's something that we've been wanting to do for a long time. But, you know, it just always takes, you know, more teamwork and more people on the team with certain abilities or more money, you know, because it's not like everybody who's good at animation can just quit their job and do that, you know. So, you know, people, that's where donations and stuff like that come in. But, you know, for a long time, we've got a small series of, you know, children's stories and stuff like that that kind of focus on finding your white pride and, you know, a history teacher who's a nemesis because he's trying to destroy the white pride and kids, you know, going around the world finding, you know, different aspects of white culture and things like that, you know, especially if you, and I don't know how often parents watch the cartoons and stuff that their kids are watching, but all of the cartoons, they've done two things. One is they're very anti-authoritarian.
Well, so make fun of dad.
Make fun of mom and dad. Make fun of the parents. Yeah. Make fun of the teachers. Make fun of the principals. Make fun of just any type of
authority. And everybody
in
the audience are laughing because right? A smart-aleck little kid.
Yeah. Who and, just, you know, you just want to like smack them.
Yeah.
And then the other is the environmental stuff. And right. that's probably the biggest thing right now is environmental stuff. And, you know, white people have always been very conscientious of the environment. And when they've messed up, they right away are trying to correct the problem and so forth. But, you know, these environmental warriors and things like that, kids, you know, cartoons, I mean, it's like it's like the kids against all adults trying to save the world because white people, who's it usually portrays white people, they're trying to kill the trees, they're trying to kill the Amazon, they're trying to kill the fish in the sea, they're trying to kill the animals in the woods.
We saw one
taking
last
over
night.
Everything, you know.
We saw a movie last night. I sat here with the two boys. We watched this because we always try to monitor
right
what the children are watching. And it was a movie that seemed like kind of an innocent movie called Hoot.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the same type of thing. With a big, mean restaurant, capitalists were coming in, and they're going to build a big a pancake house on a little piece of land where some owls lived, you know, and how mean they were. They were just terrible people. They were just mean. And with some kids who were organizing to stop these. And the kids were doing vandalism. They were doing kidnapping. They were doing all kinds of criminal behavior that was end up being encouraged and
to stop a pancake house that's going to get some mom and dad's jobs to help put food on the table for their kids.
Well, all that stuff was all that criminal behavior was encouraged and glamorized to stop this these big mean capitalists coming to build a pancake house.
Yeah, with their big mean bulldozer.
They had a bulldozer. That's right. Always got to have the bulldozer in there, you know. And so that's like you're referring to. But the movie scene in itself seems innocent.
Right.
You know, it seems innocent. Didn't have no naughty words in it. There were no sexual overtones or anything of that nature. It just was kids running around having fun and stopping the mean bulldozer.
Well, I mean, and when you consider, you know, 20, 30 years perhaps of that type of propaganda going out, you know, just continually to kids, that's why you'll see so many white kids, teens, young adults marching in cities across the United States against Trump, because how dare he rein in the EPA? Because here's an example of this big bad guy that's trying to
New York billionaire.
Trying to destroy the environment. They don't have any idea what they're even talking about, you know. And so yeah, it's really, really crucial that parents, you know, watch what their kids are watching and not necessarily stop them from watching things, but use it as a tool, you know.
Uh-oh, his bow and arrow just busted. But he'll fix it. You watch. He'll have fixed the matter in a few minutes. And but you're right. You know, that's why some people say, well, we don't have a TV. We won't let our kids watch TV. And I'm not going to condemn them. I mean, it's their house. They have the right to make their own decisions on raising their children. But we've always advocated that, you know, this is something really vile, you know, like you know, well, I guess it's open sex.
Porno.
But I mean, as far as a program that might be clean, decent in the presentation, but at the same time, in its message, destructive, we always kind of encourage kids to watch, families to allow children to watch that, but be there to teach them.
Right.
Not to lecture to them, but to teach them. So, especially those that program with Disney Channel, horrible in promoting miscegenation, race mixing, in many, many times in a very mild way, not necessarily openly, but, you know, just a wink of the white guy at the black girl is horrible. Or homosexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And so kids need to be able to point that and spot propaganda. There are adults throughout our country that cannot spot. They're grown people can't spot propaganda.
Right.
And so children need to be taught that when they're little and begin to spot that, how it's coming across and how they're being manipulated.
Well, and you know, speaking of animation is another real huge problem. And I'm gonna safely say that this is mainly something that men watch. Is I don't know why, but whatever. It's the adult cartoons. What you know started with Beavis and Butthead and The Simpsons, and they got a whole slew of adult, you know, animation now that seems like is mostly a male viewing audience. But South Park, things like that. And they watch this stuff. They don't realize their kids are in the room watching it with them. Their kids are like, wow, it's a cartoon, you know, because they're just into animation. And, you know, it's like, grow up and stop watching this stupid, you know, like women shouldn't be watching and spending time watching soap operas. And guys shouldn't be spending time watching this. I mean, grow up. Stop watching this adult animation, adult cartoons. Well, you know,
not to pat myself on the back, but I've never watched those.
No,
things. I always thought it was infantile and foolish. So I've never. And plus, I guess the biggest reason I don't care to watch them because they're really kind of crude.
Well, that's what I mean. They're very crude, very mocking of family values.
And just good social conduct.
Right.
I saw something on TV a while back, and it was sort of innocent, but I see this in movies and so forth, which is some kid, you know, and he's being a smart, like he turns and wiggles his butt in the camera.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it just, maybe I'm just old fashioned. I don't know, but to me, that's just crude. It's just crude, that's all. And yeah, I don't know what it was. But so anyway, do you boys want to depart now? Or you want to
They're saying, well, now they're watching talking about cartoons, so this is a little bit interesting.
Yeah. Okay, there. Okay, all right, bye bye. Go back there with Grandma. Anyway, they did a little stint.
Well, 5-10 minutes for kids seems like two hours of listening to the grown-ups talk.
Yeah, you know, in a loop. So, but anyway, we got to talk about South Africa. But anything else going on about South Africa that you?
Well, just another things that I was just highlighting here. One of the things I highlighted here, saying the major differences between white South Africans and that white North Americans here, that we are still in a position to do something about our future, but it requires that we stay on course.
Right.
You know, although, as you've said, Donald Trump might not be the answer, but he's bought us time.
Yeah.
And we need to take advantage of this time.
Absolutely. I come across a newspaper article. In fact, I might have it here. No, I don't. A newspaper article is on the stairway. A newspaper article, and I didn't see this, but this was from last week. Or maybe a couple weeks ago, it was an old newspaper. And evidently, Bill O'Reilly appeared on Seth Meyers' show right after the Electoral College voted. And, you know, there's a whatever the liberals don't like the Electoral College.
Right.
But, and coming from Bill O'Reilly, again, this is good. Bill O'Reilly, as we have said, is really, may not realize it, may not admit to it. He's really the spokesman for the alt-right, for the white resistance.
Right.
And he said, I'm almost quoting it exactly. He said, the liberals don't like the Electoral College because they are attempting to take away power from the white voter. And that's exactly right. And so, you know, and like you said there, you know, the whites in South Africa, they don't have a chance any longer. I mean, they're gone for it. And our country, you know, Europe is facing the same thing, unless there's an awakening. Now, Marine Le Pen said just 10 days ago, she's the gal that's running for president of France, said that 2016 is the year that the Anglo-Saxon world woke up. And I thought that was pretty amazing and pretty right on target, because not just here, but all of Europe, all through Europe, every nation, Europe, as far as I know, even Australia, there was an awakening with Paula Hansen and the One Nation party. Now New Zealand, I think New Zealand is just a bunch of white elitist liberals. I don't have a real handle on that, but I don't know. They don't have a problem with non-whites yet, and therefore there's no racial identity. And Canada seems to be really backward too in their awakening, despite the efforts of Paul Fromm and others up in Canada, a great patriots up in Canada. But Canada doesn't see. I don't hear of any real white
prominent white party
in Canada, right? But in England and France and Italy and Norway and Denmark and Germany and Sweden, there certainly is. Spain for a long time, but those others I mentioned, really, there really is a movement there of a white people reclaiming their homeland.
Just some exciting things that I've been watching. As I said, a lot of this, the new president, there's a lot new things I'm learning now. Just the immediate construction of the wall being started.
Uh-huh.
And also a thing that I've been learning about are these sanctuary cities.
Over 300 of them.
And that there's going to be federal funding that's going to be taken away from these sanctuary cities. So
hopefully. Now, Mom, Muriel, Rachel, Mom heard yesterday that Miami has decided not to remain a sanctuary city. Under the threat, had dropped their sanctuary city status. Now, I don't know if I didn't hear it. So, and she said she may not have heard it correctly. But that's what she understood them to say.
Well, one thing I thought was interesting was I was watching, I believe it was Ed Henry, who was filling in for Tucker Carlson a few nights ago on his show, and he had Francisco Hernandez, who's an immigration attorney on there, who has dual citizenship with the U.S. and Mexico. And that's what he does. He fights for, immigration, helping people get citizenship and things like that. So I'm not saying he's on our side, but I thought he made a very astute comments because they were kind of going back and forth. And Ed Henry was talking about, all these different 300 sanctuary cities. And this attorney was saying there's no such thing as a sanctuary city. And the other guy's like, what do you mean? There's 300 of them. They say they're sanctuary cities. He's like, they might say they're sanctuary cities, but they have no legal stand. And I thought this was really surprising, Maybe he's thinking, this is going to, help him get more clients or something. So I don't know. There's no such thing as a sanctuary city because the federal government have the authority to go into these so-called sanctuary cities. Their immigration laws precede whatever municipal laws that they have. Go into the jails, go into the prisons, go into...
Snatch these people up.
Snatch these people up and get them out of the country.
Yeah.
And I think the other guy's like, yeah, there is sanctuary cities. It's kind of like, I don't think they really understood what they were arguing.
They weren't on the same page.
They weren't on the same page
Not at all.
But I liked the point that the guy was making, though, is you can call yourself a sanctuary city all you want. You can get up and have press conferences and say, we have – our city's a sanctuary city. And what was it? Boston or Philadelphia, some city up on the East Coast here a few days ago that said, as a last resort, we'll take the undocumented and we'll take them and give them sanctuary in the city hall. And anyway, the fact is they can call themselves whatever they want. They have no legal standing.
They're
not sanctuary cities. Go in, ICE, go in and snatch those people up and get them out of the country.
Well, see, that's the whole point. I heard the interview, too, and I'm thinking to myself, this is really confusing because every other time I've seen him interviewed, he was like speaking on behalf of the immigrants coming here and how they're being mistreated. They have right to stay here. They like we should have no borders. And now suddenly it almost like he flipped.
Yeah.
I was really confused. What is he
saying? Well, I've never seen him before, so I didn't know what his history of past statements were. I just knew at that point on that subject, he kept saying over and over again, there is no such thing as a sanctuary city. It's a myth. And Ed Henry will say, what are you talking about? There's 300 sanctuary cities.
And then he gave some clips of people, Rahm Emanuel and the New York American
sanctuary city.
Yeah, saying we're a sanctuary city.
Yeah, and this other guy said, I don't care what they call themselves. They have no legal standing.
Yeah.
They have no legal authority to declare themselves sanctuary cities. You can't supersede federal immigration law.
Right.
So I was like, you know, but it's kind of like, that kind of, to me, was kind of all along the same type of, not necessarily comments, but line of thinking that Bill O'Reilly gave after the gay marriage deal about, well, you know, that's what the Supreme Court decided, and so that's the rules of land now, and people may not like it, and they don't have the authority to do that, to declare this is the law, any more than some mayor of some town has the authority to say this is a sanctuary city.
Right.
It's like, who cares what they say, you know?
Yeah, the rule of law is our constitution, and,
right.
And we're three branches of government. The legislature makes the laws, not the court. The court just gives their opinion.
Which means the people make the laws.
Right, and the court gives the opinion, then the legislature can come back and review the opinion and say, I'm giving you a history lesson there, Brendan, now for your American citizenship.
Oh, I bossed that.
Oh. Yes. you already cleared it, pretty clear. And the legislature makes the law. The court just gives their opinion. Then the legislature can go back, review the opinion, and say, we think the court is correct, and so we'll change the law. I know in New Hampshire, I think it was New Hampshire, about 8, 10, 12 years ago, there was a vote taken by, I forget what it was on, but it had something to do with homosexuality or something like that. And went to the state Supreme Court. And the state Supreme Court ruled, not just ruled against the legislature, but ordered, that's the part that was really interesting, ordered, gave a court order that the legislature had to change the law within 6 months. And I thought, wow, talk about abuse of power. Right. And it's beyond abuse of power because they were never given that power in the first place.
Right.
It's an assumption of power. And so I would love this. And it has happened a few times in history, but very few times. But I love Trump. It really takes some nerve for him to do this, you know. But because he'll probably even have 90% of the conservatives probably after him. But I love Trump to say at some point when the court does something, say, that's nice. We're glad to hear your opinion, but that's all that is your opinion. And if the legislature, but we're going to continue on, proceed forward unless the legislature changes the law. But I don't know, I'll be pretty gutsy, but I'd like to see that happen. So.
But you're right. There's so many of the 90% of the conservatives, you know, would be like, what?
You're going against a rule of law?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like, since when does the bench have the authority to dictate what the law is?
Right.
So, anyway. But, you know, sometimes it just takes, you know, somebody to step out and put it out there, you know, kind of like a lot of this stuff with the immigration. You know, you're seeing more and more conservatives that were, you know, just kind of reeling and feeling like, you know, oh, we got to work for immigration, comprehensive immigration reform,
right,
and all these different things, and we got to be compassionate and so forth. And now it's kind of like Trump, you know, kind of opened the door, and they're like, now you see more and more stepping out and saying, oh, okay, well, you know.
You know, and you say Trump opened the door, and that's true from a national perspective.
Right.
But the people,
right,
I hate to say working class, because many people in white collars are still working class. They're still workers. You know, people in the white collar, exactly, they still work.
Right.
It's a different kind of work. But the white voter has been on board for that for a long time. It's just the politicians have been afraid to.
Right.
And so Trump kind of opened the door for other politicians,
right,
to get on board. And because of the white people in this country, they've been angry by what's been happening for many years. And I know we discussed this the other day in our white resistance news, but let's, again, briefly, is we can sometimes ask by reporters whether Trump is going to help open door. Well, do we believe he'll help advance our cause? And the answer to that is Trump is not advancing our cause. Trump is a product of an awakening that is occurring.
Right.
Now, he did not create the awakening. The awakening and anger and frustration have been seething in the white communities, for in rural communities, for years.
Yeah, decades.
And I not even the and I said I made a difference between the white community and the rural communities, because not all white people live in the rural areas,
right.
And even white people in the urban areas who are facing the non-white problem continually, they are just as angry. And I know they like to say the rural America versus the city. Oh, white, it's white people. Yeah. White people in Detroit, Brooklyn, or New York, wherever, they're angry about what's happening equally so. And Trump became their spokesman.
Right. Well, you know, this is just a continuation of, you know, the populist party of the 80s with Willis Carto and even, you know, Ross Perot and Ron Paul and different ones, and, you know, and all the effort of, you know, like the Knights Party and so forth. It's just, this is a continuation of a continuing hammering across the nation by advocates for white people. And, you know, I thought it was interesting because, you know, so many of these things that we see Trump trying to do now has been part of our party platform for 30 years, you know, building a wall, putting people on the border. They're even looking into, you know, drug testing for welfare recipients and cracking down on, you know, definitely with NAFTA and this free trade, just so many different, you know, things that seem to be just way out of, you know, the ballpark, you know, 5-10 years ago. And you talk to some reporter, well, you're crazy, you know. How could you ever think that the people would get on board with that? We're like, look, we've got a good understanding of what the American population thinks and what they want.
Mm-hmm. Right. Deportation. That's my new favorite word.
I like the way Trump said there's no more of this cat and mouse, catch and release.
Yeah. You know? I mean, that's a crazy scheme. Yeah. You catch a guy, did he give a
sandwich?
A moratorium on immigration?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Just.
Just the first week. I don't know if he can match his second week with the first week. I mean, he will clean the slate the first week. What is it for him to do except enact all that stuff, though?
Right. And I'm really looking forward. Hopefully, Beverly DeVos will be confirmed as head of the education department and so forth. And
they don't want her. They don't want Rex Tillerson at the State Department. Of course, a bunch of those people at the State Department resigned. A couple of days ago, mm-hmm. A whole bunch of them resigned, which is good. But they, some spokesman for John Kerry said this could be horrible because these people have so much experience that cannot be duplicated very easily, and Trump's going to have like a vacuum. And Trump will fill that vacuum pretty quick. And the experience they have is not the experience we want anyway. So
what I'd really like to see, which I haven't heard much talk of yet, but I'd really like to see Trump get in there and get, you know, demand an audit of the Federal Reserve and get in there and, you know, tussle a little bit with Yellen and so forth, head of the Fed. And, you know, he's got to know that that's just a illegal, arbitrary, private deal, and, you know, put the money back into the hands of the Congress like it's supposed to be.
Right.
But that's, you know,
well, that's he's only been real, president for a week.
Right. That's so, a real, you know,
that's
stretch
a big,
there.
Big bite to take on. Last time somebody destroyed the last time somebody returned money back to the people's control, they went to war against them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the bankers have enormous power. So, but I like to see that happen for sure. And Ron Paul has been a real spokesman in that. And Rand Paul, not as vocal, but still very much so. And so that would be a good thing to happen.
Well, and Andrew Jackson tried to do that in this country.
Yeah.
And with the fact that there's a nice big portrait of Andrew Jackson hanging in the White House now.
Returned back.
Yeah, returned back by the Trump administration. I
Obama
mean,
took
who,
it
who
out.
Knows? Who knows? You know? So,
yeah.
But that would be a dynamic move. Just cancel that illegal debt and stop worrying about the deficit.
Yeah.
And
people say, well, we got this huge debt. It's bogus debt. It's not. Right. It was not a honestly. It's not an honest debt. It's a bogus debt. It's just the answer just cancel it. You know, tell the bankers, I'm sorry, debt's been canceled. We'll print our own money from now on. You know, and go on. And it wouldn't be quite that simple, but nevertheless, the solution is that simple.
Right.
But it'll be a real tussle. Just like Geraldo said the other day, and I think I don't like Geraldo, but I don't know why he's on Fox News, but nevertheless, Geraldo said the other day, and I think he's accurate, appointing a Supreme Court justice to refill or fill the shoes of Antonin Scalia, he said, will probably be fairly easy with another conservative. The liberal Democrats will squawk and scream and holler, but, you know, ultimately they'll let it go through. The ones going to be hard to replace is when, like, Ruth Ginsburg dies, mm-hmm. and he tries to replace a conservative with a liberal, because they're going to think that liberal seat is theirs and has been replaced with another liberal. Mm-hmm. He said, that's where you're going to see the fight. And the same thing will happen if you try to replace a white guy with a black jurist, or, mm-hmm. you know, or we got that that woman, can't think of her name, the Supreme Court. Can't think of her name right now.
I've got her nasty head.
Yeah, I see what she looks like. I just can't think of her name.
Kagan.
Sonia Sotomayor.
Right, Sotomayor. Kagan also.
Oh, Kagan also. Yeah, okay, Kagan. Okay, Kagan is Jewish. Sotomayor is not a white Hispanic. And they think that seat belongs to a Hispanic. And Kagan's seat belongs to a Jew. So, but anyway, he is right. Try to put a conservative in place of a liberal will probably be a fight on their hands. That's for sure. And he's got a lot of – this first week has been really amazing. The first one week. Been a power one week.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the most exciting things, I think, is the tele-exit move in California, where they're trying to – you know, I think last week we talked about how the approval for that is gone from 20% up to 30%.
Yeah.
People in California wanting to leave.
These are mainly Mexicans.
Mainly Mexicans.
Correct.
And some liberals and things like
Correct.
That. But again, and you got Keith Ellis, who has been demanding for several years now for a black nation here in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And this whole balkanization, you know, isn't really a destruction of our country, but rather it's more of a forceful realignment, I guess you could say, of cultures and people, which would help put more of an emphasis on our own white culture when we see other people trying to separate themselves. And, you know, and I think that's a good thing, especially when you view the fact that unless, you know, there was a better handle on our national deficit and the federal finances and so forth, it's just not something that's sustainable. And sooner or later, you see a breakdown. And, you know, with this kind of cultural, racial realignment going on in the country, it really does offer us some you know, some kind of hope for the future that our people can kind of regather and realign along our own culture.
Yeah.
And, you know, because whatever good that Trump does and so forth, unless we really do see a mass, and this really a massive deportation, unless that really can happen.
Deportation, my new favorite word.
The fact is, Obama gleefully stated right before he left that, you know, they've got the power now, but watch out for all the all the young people and non-whites that are going to be coming up and voting, you know, the next 4 years.
He made that statement within a week before he left office.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. And so when we talk about, you know, a new America, and we talk about a new racial awakening. And so this, you know, kind of like when I first came in here, you guys were talking about this is, you know, this Trump deal. It's kind of like gives us some breathing room. And I think it's important that white people really make the most of this time and don't just consider it as, you know, well, now we've got a free pass, and
yeah,
we all
the
good,
battle's over.
Yeah,
well,
all
the
is
war's
good
won.
To go. Right.
Got rid of the liberals and the Democrats, and Trump's going to save America.
Right.
Because
the birth rate is still the same.
Right.
White people are, as Biden said, white people, as of this year, are a statistical minority in this country. We're going to see that really play out in the numbers when the new census comes out, because they're being more concerted about who they classify as white and who they don't. Because, I mean, right now you got, you know, people from Saudi Arabia and India and Hispanics that are all considered and classified as white. And I think people are going to really be shocked when the next census comes out and find out that Joe Biden was right. We are a statistical minority,
right.
And our birth rates have dropped. Non-white birth rates are increasing. And, you know, white people have got to, you know, consider that and really consider what their future is in terms of demographics, but also their geographic location in this country.
Right. And you know, they change words along the line. They start changing words. It sounds silly at first, the meanings of words. But here this past week, I've heard twice, I heard illegal aliens be referred to as citizens based upon the fact that because they live here, they contribute to the economy, so they are, in a sense, citizens. And that was just taken for granted. These are citizens. They are our fellow citizens, our fellow Americans. And so that will probably be continued. So people don't know what a citizen is anymore. Young kids are going to just grow up thinking, in public education, thinking that if somebody lives here, they're a citizen. Just that simple. And why should a citizen be allowed to vote? They live here, they contribute to the economy, they work, they have homes, they drive cars, they do all the things that I do or you do.
It's just they don't have rights that the other citizens
yeah,
have.
Yeah, they don't have special, they don't have white privilege.
Right.
It's just that simple. Because citizenship is a white privilege.
Right.
They don't have white privilege.
And
so.
they're not even subjects of this government. They're not, you know, geographically they're under the jurisdiction, but they're not legally in the jurisdiction of this government because they're here illegally, which is goes all the way back to the, you know, the controversy over the border babies. Because, you know, well, yeah, if you're born here and your parents are under the jurisdiction of the United States, well, you're not under the jurisdiction. You're just here squatting on this land. To be within the jurisdiction entails that you have the authority to be here and within the jurisdiction, under the legal jurisdiction, and that you have some sort of part to play in the government of we the people enacting legislation. Those people aren't in or within the jurisdiction. They're just squatters.
Yeah. They're not part of the people.
Right.
That have an interlocking part of the functions of government.
Right. So, you know, that's another, the border baby issue is another one that, you know, Trump hopefully will tackle.
Right. And of course, they don't like being called border babies or anchor babies. That's fine. They find that offensive. And so people need to be careful what you say because you offend our fellow citizens.
Yeah. Offend those poor little babies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and maybe padded walls.
Yeah, you know, and you think about, you know, the Mexicans, Central Americans, and so forth that come over, but the birth tourism is huge with China.
Come here just for the sake of having a baby.
Coming here, yeah, having a baby, and
the
then
only reason to come here,
and then they go back to China, but that baby then at
is
whatever time he or she wants to come back can.
Yeah,
and. They've got a huge, huge number of Chinese that are coming over and doing that.
Just coming in for the purpose of having a baby.
Yep.
Having their child born on U.S. soil, so it's a citizen.
Right.
And it's amazing.
And there's companies and organizations that are in business just to do that.
Right.
Which ought to be, you know, they ought to be arrested for aiding and abetting a criminal act conspiracy. Conspiracy to... get around our, you know, our citizenship laws.
You would think so.
Ulterior motives.
Yeah.
But
We had let's talk a few minutes about this march we had there in D.C. We had last Saturday, a week ago, yesterday. There was a woman's, they call it the Woman's March, and which in itself is, again, is a play of words because it was not a woman's march. There was, all women do not support their agenda. It was a march of liberals and feminists and
mothers
race
of the
mixers,
movement,
yeah,
the
race
Trayvon
mixers
Martin
and illegal aliens and so on.
Black Lives Matter.
Trying to push a anti-white, anti-American agenda.
Right, because there's more white women that voted for Trump than voted for Hillary.
Right, and of course, they up to election, they claimed that Trump's not going to get the white vote, white woman vote, but he did, and he also got the college-educated vote.
Just like Romney got the white women's vote.
Yeah. So, but the huge march they had last Saturday, but then this weekend, there was the or pro-life march.
Right.
There was a pro-life march.
Yeah, Fox News referred to it all day as a pro-life march. MSNBC and CNN referred to it as the anti-abortion march.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and that was, and Vice President Pence was the first sitting person with the governing administration to speak at a pro-life march.
Now, I thought it was interesting. There was I don't know her name, but she's a regular news anchor there on MSNBC, and she went out and covered the pro-life march.
Uh-huh.
And when she went out there and was covering it, she started to say anti, and then she corrected herself and said pro-life march. And I thought that was really interesting. Because all the other reporters and people all day long on MSNBC was calling anti-abortion march, anti-abortion, the ticker running across the bottom of the TV, uh-huh. anti-abortion march. And like I said, she's on there every day. She's 3 or 4 hours a day. She's one of their main people. And she just started to say anti, and then she stopped and said pro-life. And I thought that's kind of telling.
Yeah, and you know,
that verbiage is getting
right. And it seems like a minor thing to most people. It seems like really minor because it both essentially mean the same thing. But to say anti-abortion create in the mind impression of just some angry people.
Right.
Where pro-life gives a more positive spin on it.
Right.
And if you want to look at angry people, look at liberals and are usually just more angry. Uh-huh. Angry people, and I believe conservatives are more happy people. Mm-hmm. Just like it seems kind of silly, but just like that report came out, the report of Washington Post and other major magazines, newspapers, that conservatives are better looking than liberals. Sounds silly if somebody hears this for the first time, but this was a study and reported on by the Washington Post and other major newspapers and magazines. It was reported on your news, the nightly news, a very short clip of it, because when I mentioned to Mom, she said, oh, yeah, I heard that on the news this afternoon. They didn't discuss it in length, but this was a legitimate, this is not just an opinion. This was done a study, and they found the conservatives are better looking people than liberals. I thought that was kind of humorous and funny. And so, anyway, we're almost out of time. We just got a few minutes. The Faith and Freedom Conference is coming up. Are you all geared up for that, Brendan?
Getting there, sir.
Yeah?
Getting there, yes.
Is our camp going to be looking sharp?
It's going to be looking as sharp as sharp can be. I'm just waiting for the cold weather to kind of go away. And you know how beautiful it looks here when it starts warming up and how green and the flowers come out and it looks so nice.
Yeah.
Yes.
This is without a probably, well, not probably, it is the largest alt-right family retreat in the country.
Well, definitely.
Yeah, no question about that.
Well, it's
the only. It's the only one.
Well, it's the only family retreat, but it's the largest family conference.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody else has a place like this.
Yeah, I said largest, but it's the only. As far as I know, it's the only one in the country. So it really is beautiful here in the spring, and we have nice campground. People come out here to camp.
Yeah.
Proof their tents.
Yeah.
And these are not just people that are, some of these people that come are just coming for the first time. A lot of people come for the first time. Some people come every few years. But I know, or I suspect, a certain element of people probably feel have some apprehension because they've never been here before, and maybe they're not quite sure what's going to be.
Well, it doesn't help with some of those clan shows that they show with these people with their compounds.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have big walls around us and people with, you know, machine guns at gates and that. It's, you know, it's welcome, you know.
But media likes to give that image to scare people. They want to keep white people scared of associating with other, fellowshipping with other white people.
Right.
They want to keep them isolated and separated and feel like they're all alone and there's no hope.
Right.
And they're the only one that feels that way. So the media projects that image. When people show concern or show fear, they're just kind of buying into the image that the media, your enemies, have created.
Which is, you know, and I know some people out there will be saying, well, you know, why work with the media at all? And, you know, my, you know, what I believe, and I know we all, you know, here believe the same thing, is there are a lot of people out there. The media has no problem finding people that will say, I'm on camera, oh, I'm in the Klan, or I'm alt-right, or I'm a white nationalist, you know. They don't have any problem finding people like that to give interviews. And yet so many of those are so unprofessional, have no idea what they're doing, what they're talking about, just have no experience. And so therefore it is our duty that we be always available to give the proper reflection of the white nationalist cause. It's kind of like a vacuum. If we're not there filling that space, and if we're not there working with the media and giving a positive presentation of the white nationalist cause, then somebody else is.
And
they're going to give a bad impression.
Right.
So, you know, it's our duty to do that. And I do want to mention.
And we get good stories.
Yeah, we do.
We get good stories a lot when dealing with our organization and reporting on us. We get good stories continually. We had reports from Sweden here last week, from Norway. And we got some, you're unaware of this, Brendan, but we got some, a 60 Minutes version of Australia coming here in about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And so that's going to be good. And these are, I know these are foreign entities, foreign reporters, but the point is that.
They're all on the internet. Everybody reads the same things.
Sure. Right. Yeah. It's all on the internet anymore. And, We do attract attention because we have a very powerful message of hope and deliverance for our people. We feel obligated, not only obligated, we feel it's our duty, and we feel a heavy responsibility that we not only present a good image, but we understand that
and it's an accurate image.
Absolutely, it's an accurate image, and we feel real burdened to do this in a responsible way. You know, we feel as we understand that there's millions of little white children out there who don't have a voice, and we try to be that voice in a reasonable, responsible Christian, as Christian men and ladies to our people.
And that's what's so important about these conferences. When you want to say, you know, we encourage, you know, moms and dads to bring their children, grandparents to bring their grandchildren. You know,
right.
I just think about a gentleman that came all the way from Alabama thinking this was going to be, you know, just a guy's thing. And he got there and he goes, oh, you know, I left my daughter at home. And I said, well, look. And he saw the playground. And he goes, yeah, but I've got a little kid, you know, little baby nursing. And I said, well, look, you know, we're a private nursery for the moms. And he's like, you guys got everything here. This is just not what I expected.
Yeah.
You know, next time he came along, he brought them. But
yeah. So people that might be listening first time, maybe they drove past our billboard in Harrison and saw alt-right TV or White Pride Radio, and they're listening to this for the first time. They say, I don't know anybody. I just hear your voices on the internet here, but I don't know anybody. Am I welcome? The answer is yes, you're welcome. I'm not on mailing list. It doesn't matter. You're still welcome.
Yeah.
I don't belong to any white nationalist groups. It doesn't matter. You're still welcome. But I'm a Christian. Yes, definitely you are welcome because we're Christians also. And so if you feel that you might not be welcome, you're welcome, you know, and just, you know, call our office, 427-3414-870. 427-3414, regular office hours, except on Friday, 10 to 5, and then on Friday, 10 to 12. But call us, or they can contact us to our to the internet with the website, Rachel, or not the website, but the email.
National office@theknightsparty.com.
Right. So this Faith and Freedom Conference coming up April 28, 29, and 30. So just really stop and pray about it and really just really make an effort to be here. You'll be rejuvenated. You'll be encouraged. You'll be inspired. And you go back with renewed faith that, yes, there is hope for our people. There is hope for our nation.
I want to mention quickly before we close also that members will notice that we have totally revamped and redesigned our website, kkk.com. And it's got our website already was fantastic looking, but we've changed designs and
modernized it
even. I mean, it was already modern, but, you need to change things up a bit. And we've moved all of our news articles, sections, and so forth to the globalminorityreport.com, where we have all of our media, radio articles, daily news articles, our TV shows and everything, all on that. And then our other website, which we've still have a little bit of work to do on it, but I think it looks fantastic. And I want to thank everybody that, have been involved in working to get that redesigned and up and going. And so, when you're out there moving around on the web, make sure that you share the website addresses and so forth on social media. That's really, really important, because I've got to say with great dismay that the majority of white nationalists, alt-right, et cetera, websites out there really have a crummy attitude toward the family. It's sad to say they don't represent.
Well, I don't think they really understand or appreciate it.
They don't understand or appreciate the family. They don't represent a good Christian moral foundation or values. And our organization and our websites continue time and time again to just really impress people. It's unlike any other websites or organization out there, because we are Christian. We do have a good moral foundation and values, and that is represented in everything we do, whether it's speeches or literature or websites or radio or podcasts or web shows or whatever. It's the total package.
Right.
It's the total package.
Yeah, we have lots of moms involved. Because moms have little children at home they care about and concerned about their future. So a lot of people get the idea that it's like a male-dominated thing, like that friend that came up here, you mentioned, Brendan. But we have lots of women involved, lots of women that are supporters and embrace this movement, because we're all in this together. And so mark your calendar right now before you go any further. Mark your calendar April 28, 29, 30. Give us a call. Get on the internet, send us a note, and make plans to come here and bring your family to the Faith and Freedom Conference April 28, 29, and 30. So, anything else to be said? Are we wrapped up for today?
I'm good.
That's a wrap. All right. Well, until next time, this is Thomas Robb,
Brendan Warner,
and Rachel Pencraft.
And just reminding you to love your God and to love your people.